Good morning. It's the day the Lord hath made. Today, we continue in the final chapter, not only about the Avenger, but I'm closing up on the book of Judges today. This is the ninth message. How many of you thought there are not going to be nine messages in the book? Well, there's plenty more there, but they've just worn me out with their back and forth, all right? And I'm on my last nerve with all of them, all right? Today, our reading, tell me something unusual about the reading today. Today, we're going to read what I call one of the most tragic verses in the Bible. We're also going to read what I call one of the most encouraging, hopeful scriptures in the Bible. It's all in the same story, but what really makes it crazy, that the most tragic verse and probably the most encouraging verse are only two verses apart in this story today. It's wild. It's amazing what God can. You know, I love this thing of Samson. It's a story that when we were little children, we saw it a certain way. We saw him doing all those great things, like we said with David. And we didn't know he had a problem with the girls. We didn't know he had other things going on. And each part of our lives, we see stories that relate as we get older and in maturity, even in God. It's a fun story. Now, there's one thing to know about this story of Samson. Know this, great strength in one area of your life doesn't always make up for the great weaknesses. A lot of times people get in trouble, well, I'm strong in this, but there are other weaknesses that are not there. Remember, I'm just in a quick review. Last week, I remind you what Leonard Sweet said. If you take your eyes off Christ, even for a second, you risk everything. Samson, the story is a story of a child of promise, very much like Moses, very much like Jesus, very much like another mom that you're going to hear about in 2 weeks from right now, born out of a heartfelt cry. You remember the story? We went through chapter 13 at length last week, where when it tells about the birth of Samson, it opens up with the scripture that you've heard over and over through Judges. It opens by saying the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. He gave them over. They were oppressed. There was a man by the name of Manoah, and Manoah's wife was childless, and she's calling out to God. And God himself shows up and says it's going to happen right now. But here's what's going to happen. You're going to become pregnant, but here are the rules. His hair must never be cut. He'll be dedicated to God as a Nazarite from birth. And then I said last week, it said this is in chapter 13, I think verse 4 or 5. He will begin, and I said, remember that word there. It didn't say he would wipe out the Philistines, but he will start the ball rolling to rescue Israel. The Nazarite vow, that was a consecration. That was meaning he was going to be set apart. He was going to be special. In his flesh, he seems to be pulled in other directions. He's told that he's not to drink strong drink. He's told that he's not going to do that. But it just seems to me every time he's in the neighborhood, he's got to go through the vineyard. He's got to go through the vineyard. God didn't put him in the vineyard. He went to the vineyard. He was pulled in that direction. And God said, no, you will not. But that's not good. And like I said, you may be strong in some areas, but you might not be dancing around the edge of the vineyard. Figuratively and literally right now. And in anything in our lives, those things that are a temptation to us, well, I'm strong in the Lord. I can. No, you can't. You're humans. You're humans, and you're going to mess up. So as unto God, as we are setting ourselves apart as unto God, what a puzzle he was. What a puzzle. Great ability, great blessing, but a big bundle of disappointment. Boy, he was the ball of confusion they sang about, you know. God's giftings, remember this, it can, but it will not override the will of the person that has been given that gift. You look at somebody and you say, man, you've read stories, man, they preached the word, they did this, or these Christians in my life, they told me how to do this, and look at them now, look what they've done there. That shows you can be strong in one area, but if you take your eyes off for just a moment, you can trip over into the vineyard and find yourself in a mess. I don't think anybody's ever done a Herculean feat like Noah did. Noah, when you read and see what Noah did, I mean, in the fact, and you can even go up near Kentucky and see what Noah did there. It's all that is amazing. It's amazing to do it. It's amazing to do it today, but it was more amazing to do it with the tools that they had way back then. Don't you know? don't you know? And here he is. He's done the greatest feat in history there. And what's the first thing he does? They find Noah drunk and naked. Now, that's a bad combination when you're drunk and naked at the same time. There's nothing good is going to come out of that. Nothing good. But and here he is. Why? Because he didn't keep his eyes. He was worn out. He was sick of those people, sick of those smells. He was sick of those other seven people that he had been cooped up in that boat with there. And he went nuts. He went nuts. And how many of there's always trouble when those two things are always present. So here we are today. The big, big question. We sing, it's the hymn of the faith. Why, Delilah? Linda's always loved the Tom Jones song. She's loved all those. She said, you know, I already got saved. I said, I heard that too. But as long as Elvis is there and Frank's there. I know I talked to somebody that said Frank prayed the prayer twice before he died, Frank Sinatra. So if Frank and Elvis are there, I'm happy with the whole thing right there. But you look at this guy. Why is he up? Why is he down? Y'all know people like that? They're prophesying or they're out laying in the vineyard somewhere. They got the word, but they're rolling hot today. Boom, but they're a mess tomorrow. So Grandma used to call it from the White House to the outhouse right there in one thing like that. Why is he up? Why on so many levels? Why? Because he keeps serving his flesh. He's so strong in other areas, he doesn't think he has to have his guard up. And that's a story for us today. He's very, very slow on the pickup. Remember the theological word I gave you as you walked out last week? I gave you the theological answer for how... what was wrong with this? I gave it to you. Remember, don't riddle and what? And don't fiddle. That was his problem. Additionally, he is a gifted man. But there's another thing in his character, not just the temptation. He's a hair trigger of offense and a hair trigger of emotion. I mean, he got ticked off, and he took foxes and tied their tails together and didn't just burn up the foxes. He burned up all their crops. He burned up everything else. He did it. I mean, and Grandma, you said it this way. If you're easily offended, you're easily manipulated. And here he was. Here he was. He was in a situation in his life that he was on this hair trigger thing, and he had this thing of emotion always churning in him, and when he got way out there, and he got himself into a mess. So we pick up at 16 today, 16 verse 4. Now you remember the story where we left it last week. Now we pick up. So one day it said Samson went, and I put my notes down. Every time somebody in the scripture says they went down, it's not only geography, it is spiritually. He went to the Philistine town of Gaza. He spent the night with a prostitute. Now, I'm thinking, God, why would you even put this in there? Why would you put this? A couple things are going on. Number one, he's showing I gifted him, but he still serves his flesh. His face is still not totally toward me. Also, it is a warning. It shows the conflict of unstable man and the need to reject the controls of fleshly appetites in our lives. You got that? And we all deal with that. We all deal with things, and it might be different things for different ones of us, and we must work at those fleshly things. John Hagee used to say all the time, he said, I have a great message on gluttony, and he said, I'm going to preach it as soon as I lose 20 more pounds, he said. That's the way it is with all of us. And so here's the bottom line. He could conquer lions, he could conquer Philistines, but he couldn't conquer himself. Wow. That's stunning, isn't it? Why did those guys fall? They were bold in the pulpit. They were eloquent with the word. They couldn't conquer themselves. They couldn't get there. And in verse 2, word soon spread. Girls put the word out on him that he was there. So the men of Gaza gathered together and waited all night at the town gates. They kept quiet during the night. And they said, listen, when morning light comes, we're going to kill him. We're going to kill him. But notice this. In foolishness, God is still doing something. Watch this. It said Samson stayed in the bed, but only until midnight. He got up. He took hold of the, and what he did, he knew something was going on. He heard and saw the rustling. It said he went to the town gate, including the two posts. He lifted them up, bar and all. He put them on his shoulders. He carried them all the way up to the top of the hill. Don't fool with him. He's a hair trigger. He'll go nuts on you. So he's going postal on these Philistines right here. He's already done it with the jaw of a jackass already. He's already done that. He's already taken their animals and blown up their crops. But boy, he's still ticked off by what happened with the whole wedding situation. It's got him still ticked off. Now here he was. He went to the top of the hill across from Hebron. Now this is wild. This is making a big statement in the scripture here. See, when and notice the symbolism here. It said, when you possess the gates of your enemy, you were in charge. When you had the gates of the enemy, their security had been breached. Have you ever seen those movies? Those movies that scare you sometimes, and they think they're inside and they've locked everything and it's very secure, and all of a sudden there's a note or there's a voice or there's a something or a sign that lets you know somebody has been in here. And you know that creepy feeling? Well, that's kind of what happened with that concept. Their authority had been taken away, and the one who owned the gates, he was in authority now. Fast forward, you're going to remember one day when we finally get to the New Testament where Jesus says in Matthew 16, verse 18, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. There was a symbolism going on, but there was a statement being made strategically and spiritually. There's a lots of history right here at this spot of Hebron, by the way. This is where you first see the first promise coming to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And a lot of things happened at this spot. So it is a high place of symbolism that he took the very thing that spoke of their protection and their power. He ripped it up out of the ground, and he brought it up there. This is really big. Why is this so big? So that they can say only God could do this. What do you mean? Well, some historians say the gates were likely 10 feet tall. Some say they were also probably about 10 feet wide. One writer said they could have been up to 1 foot thick. They had bronze plates on the doors and the bars and the hinges. Somebody said that perhaps the gates could have weighed close to 5,000 pounds. Now, the journey uphill was an 18-hour journey. I read a guy that wrote a thesis on the gates and did all the calculating and the calculus and all it looked like a thing for a blast off at NASA. He did all the calculations. He drew the charts and everything like that. And he said if this much amount was on his back and then it said talk about he walked uphill with it. Some of y'all can't take groceries up 4 steps. All right. And it said he walked uphill with it. He walked up, and he calculated that if he had this much thrust, and maybe if he had he calculated that journey could have taken up to 18 hours with this on his back. He didn't do this. God did it. But again, why don't you leave well enough alone? Why don't you just go home and say, man, that was a close one? No, because he can beat up the Philistines, but he can't take care of himself. So here we are. Here we are. Sometime later, Victor Mature fell in love with Susan Hayward. Oh, he watched it as kids. Delilah. He's met his kryptonite, y'all. He's an Avenger, but he's got a weakness. And the same mindset that he had with the other girl that he met was his mindset. Remember what he said to his mom and dad? When he said, I like that, she said, why do you want that Philistine girl? Get a nice little Jewish girl, and everything will be a little. He said, no. Remember the line? See, she pleases me. It's going to get you in trouble. Boop, boop, let the alarms go off. Does it please God? And she lived in the valley of Sorek. Do you know what Sorek means? The valley of what? The valley of grapes. There he goes again. There he goes again. He's got to dance around. He's got to go dance around it every time. He just won't leave it alone. He's got the wrong girl at the wrong place. This is a recipe for problems. It's going to happen right now. And notice it said he went to her. She lived in a valley. It was again going down. Can I just point out Delilah didn't live in the same building. She didn't live around the corner. Obviously, we understand that the Lord's Prayer had not been written yet, but this is quite highly likely the line was put in, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. But why, I really wrestled with the warts and all showing of Samson. It's hard. Any way you read it, it's uncomfortable. Why is it there? Again, it's the warning. He kept tempting himself. He thought he was immune. And in any walk of life, if you think you're gifted, or you think you're holy in one area, you're not automatically immune to other traps. Paul said it this way, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. That's in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. That's what Paul said there. He wrote a little bit later on in Galatians chapter 5. For you, brethren, you've been called to liberty. But notice this. There are people right now, well, we're free in God, and we can do whatever we want. We're under grace. We're not under the law no more. Yeah, but the presuming on God is the walking alongside the vineyard. This picture here. The presuming on God is the laying with the Philistines. The presuming on God, it's going to be okay, and it's all going to be over, and I'm going to be all right there. For brethren, you've been called to liberty. Only do not use your liberty as an opportunity for the flesh. One other translation says it this way, and I like this better. Don't use your liberty as an occasion to sin. Got that? Now, we're seeing in America right now, America was taken down by something that was real in many areas, but others saw it as an occasion to sin, to use other things to take us down. And that's ungodly right now. Delilah might have been cute, but Delilah wasn't good. You got it? He liked what he saw. And I don't care how you paint it. Yeah, I don't care how cute it is. If it's against the word, it's not good. Grandma, you say it this way. Just because you put syrup on something, don't make it pancakes. And he did his best. And it took him down. You know the story there. And I pick up at verse 5 of chapter 16. It said, the rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, entice Samson. Find out what makes him so strong. How can he be overpowered? How can he be tied up securely? And then each of us, we talk about a payday, each of us, not all, each of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me what makes you so strong, you're so cute. What would it take to tie you up securely? Samson is there, you know, and he's enjoying the attention and everything. He said, look, if I were tied up with 7 new bowstrings that have not been yet dried, I'd become as weak as anyone else. There he goes. He's riddling and fiddling again. You got it? He's having an ongoing conversation. Go back in the garden. The ongoing conversation got him in trouble. Pretty soon when we get into 1 Samuel, you're going to see an ongoing conversation gets David up a tree. You can't have those things right there. So the rulers brought Delilah 7 new bowstrings. She tied him up. She had hidden some men in one of the inner rooms of the house. She screamed out in the night, Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you. But when Samson woke up, he snapped the bowstrings as a piece of string snaps when it's burned in the fire. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Now, you think he'd start putting his antenna up here. But he was looking at the sweetness. He was looking at the syrup. He was looking at all of that. So, we're going to try again. So she said to him, you've been making fun of me, Snookums. You've been telling me lies. You're not telling me the truth. Can you hear it? Can you hear it? Oh, come on. Get real with it. It wasn't, for you have not dealt truthfully with me. No, man. The finger was in the ear, and she was on the other side over there, and she was talking there, and he... you got trouble going. Come on, you're not telling me the truth. You're telling me lies. Now, please tell me how you can be tied up securely. He replied, okay, if I was tied up with brand new ropes, never been used, I'd be as weak as anybody else. So Delilah took 2 new ropes. The boy is not getting, he's dull. He's dull to it because he's being driven by his flesh. You know, it's really, we're standing here on this viewpoint and say, how stupid are you? You understand that? But the boy was on fire, and he's not thinking. And here's what's going on right now. So she took the rope. She did it again. Men were in the same room. Samson, they've come. Again, he snapped the ropes from his arms as if they were thread. Delilah comes back in verse 13, baby talking probably now. You've been making fun of me. You've been telling me lies. You don't really love me. Now, come on, tell me that you don't really love me. Oh, honey, you know I love you. No. Okay, if you were to weave 7 braids of my hair into the fabric on your loom and tighten it with the loom shuttle, I would become weak. So while he slept, she did that. I'm telling you. He just, yeah. You know, in the cartoons, you know, where the cat was yelling and the dog goes, shut up, and smacks him like that. That's what they should have done to him at this point right here. Samson woke up, pulled back the loom shuttle, yanked his hair away from the loom and the fabric. You think he'd have caught on by now. And you know what it says now in the next verse, in verse 15? So Delilah pouted. Everybody look straight ahead. How can you tell me you love me? Is that made a matter of love? How can you tell me you love me? You don't share your secrets with me. You've made fun of me 3 times now. You still haven't told me what makes you strong. And she didn't stop. Verse 16 vividly says, she tormented him with her nagging day after day until he was sick to death of it. The never-ending conversation wearied him. And you need to know that your tempter is relentless. I'm on firm ground when I say that if he had not told her here, she'd have done it again, and they'd have done it again. I did a message some years ago, and I said, the devil don't take no for an answer. The devil doesn't punch out at 5 o'clock Friday afternoon and come back to see you Monday morning at 8 o'clock and punch. No. But he kept living in his fantasy. He kept saying, I can beat anything, but life is not a fantasy. Life, you got to live it. You got to pay attention. Verse 17, finally, he shared the secret. My hair's never been cut. I was dedicated to God as a Nazarite from birth. And if my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as anyone. And there was something in the way that he said it that she said in verse 18. She realized he had told the truth. So come back one more time. The Philistines came with the money in their hand. Verse 19. Delilah lulled Samson to sleep with his head in her lap. Couldn't stay away, man, from the wrong places, could he? Notice, by the way, every attempt to conquer him came when he had been, listen, lulled to sleep. Do the connection here. When he had been lulled to sleep, the same is with us. The attack, the surprise attack, will come upon us in our lives when we are sleeping in our spirit, not paying attention. We're weary. We're tired. We might be groggy. We might be slow to respond. That's why 1 Peter, Paul writes it, nails it to the word right in 1 Peter. He said, you be sober, you be vigilant, because your enemy doesn't take time off. He roams. He seeks whom he may devour. It is all right there. So then she called the men to shave off the 7 locks of his hair. Now watch this. And in this way, she began to bring him down. That was the goal, and this was the process. She cries out, Samson, the Philistines have come. When he woke up, he thought to himself, I'm powerful. I've done these great feats. Look at those guys. I've done all these things. I will do as I did before and shake myself free. Now, I'm going to give you what I consider one of the most tragic sentences in all of Scripture. I think this is the most tragic thing that anybody can say. It says, and then it said, he didn't realize that the Lord had left him. Does that give you a shudder? He was in the middle of all of this, and he didn't realize that the Lord had left him. That, to me, that is tragic. Gifted from birth. What a promise. The baby pictures, man, there he is. Look at him. Look at him lifting that. He's something. And the promise there. But he was so into what he could do, he never fully realized that it was a gift from God. And he dealt with this back and forth. That's human. That's humans not knowing God, not serving God. To me, I find that to be the most tragic sentence, one of the most tragic in Scripture. So the Philistines captured him and gouged out his eyes. They took him to Gaza, where he was bound with bronze chains, and he was forced to grind in the prison. You know, somebody said, well, he tells these stories, and he was cavorting with all these women, and he was doing all these things, and it was terrible, and God didn't judge him. What do you think this is? What do you think the penalty, what do you think about this penalty here? And they're going to turn him into a circus sideshow so they can laugh not at him, to laugh at his God. Seen stories, and you read the news stories of some preacher this, and it's they don't care about that person. They want to make fun of the man's God so we can denigrate. You see that? They're all that way. No, they're not. And this was really the goal, to denigrate their God. It's tragic. The old gospel preachers used to say it this way at this point. They would say, sin will take you farther than you want to go. And it'll make you stay there longer than you want it to stay. You can't just tap it. The other preachers used to tell me, the old-time preachers used to preach talking about the sin. He said, the sin is binding, it's blinding, and it's grinding. That's what it does. But how did he get here? It didn't just happen. It was the crop had come in from his actions and his thoughts. He entertained evil. And as long as he entertained evil, he was there. Those of you who are in sales, God bless you. I couldn't do it. I can't take the rejection. I've seen people go to these classes and they teach, as long as you can keep the customer talking, go to buy a car. And I say, well, what would it take to get you in this? I go, wait. No. And they keep the talking going. As long as they can keep you talking, you're there, Bill. You're there. Now, I'm not really a good customer, and I have a hard time. And when I hear that, the alarms start going, and I'm like the Bug's Life, you know, with the light, and he's going, I can't help it. I mean, I got to get out, you know. I mean, when I hear it, and that's exactly what's going on here. So here he is at this point in time. He can't visit with us. It'll pull you in. Now, he is a mess. He feels hopeless. He feels helpless. He is a failure, but time began to pass. And when you are in a difficult time and you feel like you're helpless and you're hopeless and even that you're a failure, it's time to pray, it's time to reflect, it's time to call on God. Believe me, he wasn't calling on God in some stained glass prayer that he had memorized. He was calling from his gut, oh Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. I told you that within two verses that I would give you what I thought was one of the most tragic verses and then one of the most hopeful, victorious verses. And you get that hopeful, victorious verse because time passes, even with the blind and grinding going on right now. In verse 22, and I want to give you some hope today. It says, before long, though, his hair began to grow back. Why is that there? There was no magic in his hair. It had everything to do with the commitment that he had made to God. But it was letting him know, hey, something's coming in up there. Something's coming. It's coming. Doesn't that excite? Isn't that the God of the flesh, the God of this earth would say, dude, that's your fault. You're going to deal with that. But here he is. He's blind. He's got those dark circles under there. They're kicking him. Little kids are fooling with him, and they're making fun of him there. They're bringing, come on, do your trick, strong man. They put him in chains. Imagine all those things. And finally, one day, there he is, and he goes to wipe sweat. He said, what's that? And all of us said, but before long, his hair began to grow back. Isn't that beautiful? Come on, y'all. Am I the only one? I mean, what a promise. That's God saying, hey, stupid, I still love you. You got yourself into this, but just, you feel that up there? I'm still here. I'm still here. Isn't that a wonderful, what, I mean, right there, it's good to know. It's good to know. That you can be at a point and say, I didn't know God had even left me there. But then when the time passes and we're before God, you feel something coming. I love that sentence. I love it for me. I love it for you. It speaks hope. It speaks of promise. It speaks of a new start. So this thing kicks in gear. The Philistine rulers, festivals going on, sacrifice, praising their god Dagon. Remember, Dagon was the god of grain. He burned down all their fields and even burned their grain up. That was pretty well. Time had passed. And and that was really a revenge for what he had done to their fields. And they said, our God has given us the victory over our enemy, Samson, our God. It isn't the arrogance there. And the people saw him, and they praised their God, saying, our God has delivered our enemy to us. The one who killed so many of us, he's now under our power. So they're half drunk now. And the people demand, bring out Samson so he can amuse us. They're going to say, make him dance in front of us. Make him do little tricks. And he was brought from the prison to amuse them. Where we are in our world today right now. They had him stand between the pillars supporting the roof. They chained him up and going to make light of him and laugh at him and have fun with him. There was a young boy that was leading him. Who is he? He's the first Avenger. He's the first Avenger. He's coming back. if this is coming back, something else is coming back. Hadn't told anybody. He said, say, boy, come here. Take my hands and place them against the pillars that hold the temple. I want to rest against them right now. The temple was completely filled with people. The Philistine rulers were there, about 3,000 men and women on the roof also were watching as Samson amused them. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, Sovereign God, remember me again. Wow. Remember me again. With one blow, let me pay back the Philistines for the loss of my two eyes. He put his hands in the center pillars and he held the temple and he pushed them with both hands and he prayed, Let me die with the Philistines. And the temple crashed down on the Philistine rulers and all the people. And in his death, talk about God having the last laugh. He killed more people when he died than when he had during his whole lifetime. Later, his brothers and other relatives went to get his body to give him a proper burial there. And don't you know there was rejoicing, but it was the unfulfilled, unrealized potential was that sore thing that stayed with them. It didn't have to be. Oh, I'm grateful for that, the story. I'm grateful for the way it ends, but it didn't have to be that. He ruled for 20 years. It's a victorious, but it's a sad story. It didn't have to be. But by the way, remember this. It wasn't God. Samson ran to the darkness, and it overtook him. And pay attention to this enduring truth for all of us right now. The truth continues right now. The war is always the same. We read it from the garden. We've read it throughout the temptations, even the teaching of Jesus, and even the writings of 1 John. The technique is always the same. We're dealing with the concepts of the world, the flesh, and the devil. And then in 1 John 2, we read it. We read about the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. Warren Wiersbe wrote a great, great commentary on some of these stories, and just a food for thought right now. He said, Samson was one of three men especially identified with darkness that went to darkness. The other three were Saul and were Judas. And he said, Saul lived for the world. He was prideful. He wanted to be seen. And he said, Samson lived for the flesh. You know that story. Judas gave himself to the devil. And he said, all three of them ended up taking their own lives. All three of them took their own lives. Where does it start? You take your eyes off for 1 minute. You got a problem. What a story. But again, why include this? Some of these grisly details? It's a warning. And by the way, notice that the New Testament doesn't mention Samson's failures. They look at him through New Covenant glasses of grace and restoration, and he's one of the Hebrew 11 guys. The great writer Wadsworth Longfellow said it this way, great is the art of beginning, but greater is the art of ending. That's cute, but Solomon said it better. The end of the matter is better than its beginning. And here's the good part of it. No matter where you are at this moment, God will listen to your call. But here's the story. Here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line you take from Samson. Three statements. You got to start well. You got to run well. And you got to finish well. We got a basketball team that can start well. They can run well. But they can play all but the last 3 minutes of a basketball game. They can't finish well. They've lost 19 games in the last 3 minutes. So where does this brings us to the end of Judges? The book of Judges does not end. It goes on for a few more chapters. But it is the story over and over again. I'll be telling you the same stories over and over again. The people of Israel, in fact, the book closes as it opened. Israel, the people, they're in disarray. They continued in their circle of sin. You know what? You remember the clock? They continue in that thing. They continue in debauchery. They continue in idol worship. And the idol worship, if you read in some of these other chapters, you think some of the stories about Samson were a little uncomfortable. They get flat grisly when you read some of the other things that the children of Israel did and the way they... There's even a story here that we won't read right now where a bunch of these crazed men were in such rage on their insides. They came and started beating on the gate of a city. And these men warriors were screaming, we hear you have some beautiful men in there. Bring them out so we can have them for ourselves. You do the math, all right? You do the math right there. And the judgment fell, and it goes, oh, and it's you read it. God, why is it there? Because God is saying, if you're left to your own devices, you'll be just like them. And Israel could not even keep the first commandment. You will have what? No other gods before me. Even when they realized that God had saved them, even when, like Samson, they became paralyzed and powerless to do anything against the evil. Sounds like America today. We're powerless against evil right now, it seems. That's what people are saying. Hey, we're powerless, and they're doing this right in front of our eyes. Well, there's a demonic Teflon spirit that's covering, but I'm believing that the Holy Spirit is going to start blitzing some of those things in Jesus' name. It happens in prayer meetings like we're going to have. During this entire book of Judges, God wanted to be the head of Israel. He wanted the people to love him. He wanted the people to trust him instead of a king. Now, we've gone through 300 years in the last 9 messages. Israel had 15 judges. Some of them were good, like Deborah. Some of them were evil, like Abimelech. Judges often made poor choices because they did not wholly seek God for their decisions. Again, we're living in that today right now. But the neat truth is this: God was always standing nearby for his kids. All right, the book of Judges is going to close like it opened. Over and over, in fact, chapter 17, it says in verse 6, everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Chapter 21, verse 24, it says it this way: then the people of Israel departed by tribes and families. They returned to their new homes. In those days, Israel had no king. No king, big troubles. And all the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. Are you living that today? This is how the book ends. So I'm not going to go into all the rest of it because it's the same story over and over. It's the same today. If we're not submitted to God, if we don't have a single focus, we will end up doing what seems right in our own eyes right now. That's what people are doing right in their own eyes. They're going to stop the speech of the gospel. They will stop those things. Throughout this journey, throughout the journey of the last 9 messages, God has shown you a colorful array of characters to bring about a deliverance plan and to teach each one of us. There's hope for you. There's hope for me. But remember, the truth stays the same, and Jesus will tell you about it in Matthew, where he says, no man can serve two masters. That's Judges altogether.